Saga Canyon is a good destination for geologists and nature travelers venturing into the Lute. The vegetation, such as salt cedar trees in some parts of the canyon, made the canyon even more beautiful. From the bottom up, ravines look just as beautiful. I walked along much of Raga Canyon from above and captured many beautiful views of it, but it was now time to go down to the bottom of it. This part of the wall is solid. It's hard to walk on. It's very steep too, as you can see. You have to take a lot of care going down. My God, yes! At the bottom, the canyon was beautiful and scary. I kept thinking its walls were going to come crashing down any minute. Walking at the foot of those majestic walls, I felt how little and weak I was compared to the canyon and to its creator. On one hand, the beautiful long natural statues, and on the other, the tunnel-shaped arcs carved into the walls were all astonishing. Statues chiseled by gravity pulling down the dirt and pebbles on the walls of the ravine. The view down here is simply breathtaking. The huge, majestic statues carved out on the walls of the canyon have taken thousands of years to be made. As loose earth from the top of the canyon cascaded down to the bottom over the years, it created these beautiful shapes on these walls. They are stunning. Some of them look like humans, and others like certain animals. This canyon is just as beautiful down on its bed as it is from above. This dry tree over here, in fact, there are many others scattered across the ravine, floodwaters on the highlands and on the plains sweep them up along with some of the trees that grow at the mouth of the canyon in spring and dump them over here. It's a bizarre scene here. It's very dangerous to come here in the spring season because floodwaters are deadly. Ravine exploration is among the most interesting fields in nature traveling. There are many adventurers around the world who are in love with exploring valleys and canyons. But this field of sport comes with its own hidden dangers. The collapse of the walls or falling from the edge of a canyon's walls are among those dangers. But there's another more serious threat to the life of nature travelers, which is seasonal floodwaters caused by rainfall. Just take a look at what seasonal rivers have done to these walls. The water can be around 2 meters deep here at the time of a flood and can be fatal. Whenever I travel to a place like this, I study up on its weather and climate before I set out, so I won't run into any trouble. So when it's raining, you better not be anywhere near the bottom of any ravine. Although Raga Canyon is very wide and the floodwaters flowing in pose a less serious threat, it is likely for torrential rain to come down in the nearby areas. And that means flash floods at a certain time during a day or night or a whole day. So at a time like that, you better not come here. Most nature travelers take all kinds of precautions prior to their adventure. But most of them don't pay much attention to the climate of the places they travel to. They don't take the weather forecasts very seriously. In 2005, 11 mountaineers from Razvin, with all their equipment and years of experience, entered Andres Canyon in Alborz province. But because they had ignored the weather forecast and the predicted rain, they had an accident. During rainfalls, valleys and canyons that offer no escapes are the most dangerous places in the natural world to be. In that year, heavy rain set off floodwaters in Andres Canyon, and unfortunately, it took the lives of all 11 mountaineers. Therefore, the most important thing that natural explorers should take into account is the weather forecast, the difficulty of the route they're traveling on, and their mental and physical strength for the trip ahead. You can't put a price tag on the environment. All those who walk into nature speak of it as a cathartic experience and absorb massive amounts of positive energy. In my opinion, because the natural world is a manifestation of the greatness and beauty of God, I have walked a very long distance. I'm about to arrive at the end of the canyon. I'm going to have to get out of it before dark sets in, concluding another leg of my trip. It's very easy to pollute your environment, but that's not right. It only goes to show how irresponsible we humans can be. We have to take responsibility for the environment in our country and in the entire planet. We mustn't dump our garbage out in the open and instead send it to the recycling system. We must treat nature the same way we do our homes. Only then can we say we are committed to other humans, to the planet Earth, and to future generations. I'm approaching the end of my trip. I have no doubt that many of my countrymen and women are not familiar with the beautiful natural wonders of Kerman province. And many of the officials in the province don't seem to be aware of the great potential these natural wonders have as tourist destinations. In addition to its old history and culture, the province boasts unique natural features on a par with their counterparts in the rest of the world. In the developed world, development doesn't include building roads, hotels, and tourism centers in the heart of the environment. In the century we live in, development and progress is tantamount to the unconditional and responsible preservation of the environment, and sustainable development of the tourism industry can easily set in motion the big wheels of the country's economy. The environment in Iran is very fragile and sensitive, but with proper professional preservation and protection, by people and officials alike, it can turn into a big generator of jobs and revenues, provided that we appreciate what we have and do all we can to preserve what's left of Iran's untapped natural world. We should perish the thought of construction on it.
I'm sure you'll agree with me that Iran's deserts, with their varied and dramatic landscapes of canyons, yardangs, and their beautiful flora and fauna, are a unique destination for the demanding traveler to discover a wealth of exceptional and unspoiled views. And that's it for this week. Do keep in touch with us, and until next week, goodbye.
Follow us on social media to stay up to date on the latest global developments. You can keep in touch with us by following us on Twitter at twitter.com/parstodayen. You can also follow IRIB English Radio on Instagram via instagram.com/parstodayenglish.
This is
for a better life.
For a better life.
فرمود بعثت لأتمم مكارم الأخلاق.
The Holy Prophet of Islam says, I have been sent to complete noble manners.
Sheikh Javed Akbari, the researcher on Islamic studies from Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم. بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. Well, in the previous episode, we talked about a better life. We talked about how a better life can be achieved. And we said that a better life is not about money, it's not about social status, it's not about material gains. A better life is not about material comfort, but about a life filled with dedication, with tolerance, and with kindness and compassion. And it is a life filled with hope, possibility, and a sense of realness. And of course, we did say that unless you change your attitude, mentality, and your mindset, you will never achieve a better life. And a better life is not possible unless you, of course, change your mindset and your attitude and your world view. Now, I did also mention that, of course, it is important to know that we as human beings have this life and this one chance to make the best out of life, because this world is transient, this world is not eternal, and we will live only for, let's say, 50 or 60 or 70 years. And we have to make the best out of this life. We have to ensure that we live a better life. If you want to live a better life, of course, as I said in the previous episode, you have to stop making excuses. You should stop telling yourself that you cannot do. You deserve to do it, but you need to have the guts to do it. And of course, as I said, time flies. Al-fursatu tamurru kamarr sahab. Of course, the opportunity passes away and it gets lost just as the cloud in the sky passes away and moves out of the horizon. So time also flies, and of course, 1 year can be gone faster than we can imagine. So if we have actually the intention to improve, if we have the intention to achieve a better life, of course, we need to commit ourselves to living a better life. And we need to make up our minds and take action. Because without taking action, because without a firm decision, we will not achieve our goals in this life.
At this time, we have a short break, and then we'll listen to the continuation of the speech of Sheikh Javed Akbari. You're listening to For a Better Life from IRIB English Radio.
There is a hadith from Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam who says, "Man sawa yawmahu fahuwa maghbun." This hadith has been transmitted and has been related from Commander of Faithful Imam Ali alayhi salatu wasalam. And also the same hadith has been reported from the Holy Prophet, peace be upon him, and his family. Of course, by different narrators and on the authority of both Shia and Sunni narrators. The question is, what does it mean? Man sawa yawmahu fahuwa maghbun. Of course, literally, it means he whose 2 days are equal is a loser. It's a very important hadith because it says that you need to work hard, you need to struggle, and you need to toil, you need to strive in order to thrive. If your yesterday is equal with your today, and if your last year is equal with this year, then of course you are a loser. You are at loss. You have gained nothing. Every day we need to have something. We need to achieve something. We need to perfect ourselves. We need to make gains, of course. I have got a few amazing tips which I need to share with you, of course. In order for us, obviously, to live a better life and to achieve our goals, we need to stop procrastinating. This is the first point, okay? And there is a famous proverb in English which says, do not put off till tomorrow what you can do today. And of course, procrastination is highly discouraged in Islam. Why should we push till tomorrow what we can do today? This is the question. If you do something today, you should do it. And if you can do it today, you must do it. Don't procrastinate. Do it now when you are able to do it, unless and until you value yourself, you will not value your time. And of course, unless and until you value your time, you will not do anything with it. So life is important, time is important, and we have to make use of this opportunity to do what we can do today. Do not put off till tomorrow what you can do today. So the first thing is that we should stop procrastinating. And then as we go on, there is another thing, that another point or another tip that I want to make. Never doubt yourself. I just don't get why you should doubt yourself. That's something you should never do, okay? The worst enemy to creativity is self-doubt. You should believe you can do something. Self-confidence is a great asset that you need to develop in yourself. If you start doubting that you won't be able to do something, you will never take action because you do not trust yourself and you do not have confidence. A lack of confidence will stop you from making headway, from making any progress. So stop doubting yourself. And then people pleasing. This is the third point I want to make, okay? You need to stop trying to live your life pleasing others, living for others and not for yourself. If you're busy pleasing everyone, you are not being true to yourself. You have to realize in trying to please all, you would end up pleasing no one.
Please send any suggestion, any idea to our email, that is englishradio@irib.ir.
Obviously, trying to please others will give you a feeling that it is your duty to please others. At the end of the day, others will also keep expecting you to do for them what they themselves can do for themselves. And you yourself will also start feeling that you can also do something, that it's your duty to do something for others in order to please them, in order to constantly get their satisfaction. Therefore, my dear brothers and sisters, you need to be moderate in your conduct and in your behavior, in your interaction with other people. While trying to keep others happy, of course, you need to be moderate. You need to follow the middle approach. Now, negative thoughts would not help you achieve big things. This is the fourth point. Negative thoughts will not help you achieve big things, of course. Believing in negative thoughts is the single greatest obstruction to success. So if you want to be successful, you should think positive, maintain positive thoughts. Do not be pessimistic. Do not keep negative thoughts with you. And fear of success, this is the fifth point. Ironically, for many people, the fear of success is bigger than the fear of failure. Even though success could be more frightening than failure sometimes, but of course, you have to overcome that fear. Sometimes these fears come up due to living up to parental expectations. So don't be afraid. Don't be afraid of failure. And achieving success should not engage your mind and your thought. And don't care about parental expectations. You need to work for yourself. You need to be honest with yourself.
That was all for this program. Inshallah, we listen to other episode of this program, For a Better Life, same time, same channel. Fi amanillah.
Your mercy, your love is all I need. All I need. All I need.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo Jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United States and China have in recent months escalated their war of words. This time, China says its sovereignty is at risk, cautioning the U.S. against sending the wrong signals.
We urge the U.S. to strictly abide by the One China principle and the three joint communiques. The U.S. should act and speak cautiously on the Taiwan issue and refrain from sending wrong signals to separatist forces in Taiwan to avoid seriously damaging Sino-U.S. relations and peace and stability in the Taiwan Strait.
The Chinese Foreign Ministry spokesman warned that his country has no room for compromise on issues involving its core interests, including its territorial integrity. Wang also noted that Taipei is an inalienable part of China's territory, and the issue is purely China's internal affair, and that Beijing won't allow any external interference. It was responding to these comments U.S. President Joe Biden made during a CNN town hall Q&A.
I don't want a cold war with China. I just want to make China understand that we are not going to step back. We are not going to change any of our views.
So are you saying that the United States would come to Taiwan's defense if China attacked?
Yes, we have a commitment.
What the United States says, if the American president puts in the minds of China, of the Taiwanese independence activists and independence politicians, the idea that Taiwan could, for example, make a declaration of independence, China would act on that. And I don't know what the United States could, or on its own, on the terms of its own terms of China policy since the last 50 years, should do or could do to prevent China from acting on that.
The U.S. has recently deployed a fleet of B-1 bombers and 200 airmen to its notorious base at Diego Garcia in the Indian Ocean, the first such deployment to the island in 15 years. The base at Diego Garcia has a dark history. The U.S. has used the base to launch airstrikes in Iraq and Afghanistan, and it's said to have been used as a black site to interrogate and torture victims of the CIA. China considers Taiwan as part of its territory and has warned against any of its independence bids. Tensions escalated recently over Chinese military flights as well as increased U.S. military support for Taiwan. Just 2 weeks ago, U.S. media reported that American forces had been secretly training Taiwanese troops for months. China has sovereignty over Chinese Taipei, and under the One China policy, almost all world countries recognize that sovereignty. The U.S., too, recognizes Chinese sovereignty over the island, but has long curtailed Taipei in an attempt to unnerve Beijing. The United States, which backs Taipei's separatist president, also continues to sell weapons to the island in defiance of Beijing and in violation of its own official policy.
What they call a strategic ambiguity in American policy. They like to keep Taiwan as in some kind of de facto independent status, but they have recognized de jure that it's one country and Taiwan is a part of China.
China has also denounced the recently clinched AUKUS pact between Australia, the United Kingdom, and the U.S., under which the trio is expected to make a fleet of nuclear-powered submarines. Beijing argues that the pact threatens regional stability and poses nuclear proliferation risks. U.S. President Joe Biden has repeatedly vowed to re-engage with the international community, marking a departure from his predecessor Donald Trump's foreign policy. In case of China, however, it appears that he's following in the footsteps of Donald Trump's America First stance against Beijing.
Abdulbari Atwan, a well-known author, has described the recent highlights in Iraq, Syria, and Lebanon as an American Zionist conspiracy to ignite a civil war in the region. Atwan stated that the U.S. Zionist conspiracy to create a sectarian conflict in the region will fail. He said, sectarian conflicts have been created with the aim of securing Israel's interests and stealing Lebanese gas. But this sedition will not go ahead, and if it goes on, the U.S. and its allies will surely be defeated. In fact, the axis of resistance in the region has so far managed to oppose Western, namely United States and Israel, interests in the region and foiled their plots. Members of the axis of resistance include Iran, Syria, and Lebanon's Hezbollah, and the Palestinian Islamic Jihad and Hamas, to name a few. The U.S. has attempted to weaken the resistance axis by hatching different plots, such as causing instability and wars in the region for years. However, the resistance has always been ready to properly respond to these threats. For instance, Washington has always sought to keep Israel's enemies at one another's throat so that they could not give Israel trouble. But the resistance front has time and again proven that it will not allow the Tel Aviv regime to commit crimes with impunity, as it has launched retaliatory attacks against Tel Aviv, which have exposed the vulnerability of the regime's entities in the region. Israel's constant violations of Lebanese airspace are also a source of instability. This has been seen as a constant provocation by Israel, mainly directed at the resistance movement Hezbollah. Meanwhile, the U.S. has also been accused of creating an atmosphere of instability. On the one hand, it has imposed sanctions on Lebanon, which prevents foreign investment in the country. It has even opposed the delivery of fuel shipments from Iran is in an emergency mode due to a lack of fuel. Meanwhile, the U.S. ambassador has stirred controversy by making anti-Hezbollah statements, so much so that a judge ordered a media ban on her. The trip by the number three diplomat at the State Department, Victoria Nuland, to Lebanon, also proved to be controversial. Her purpose was to meet government officials and representatives to discuss Lebanon's reforms and elections. The question that arises is, what does she have to do with Lebanon's elections? Nuland was famously accused of promoting regime change in Ukraine, backing the Maidan protesters and opposition, which showed how the Ukrainian opposition is being manipulated by Washington. Coincidentally, while she was there, the deadly protest in Lebanon erupted, which resulted in the death of several Lebanese. What is for certain is that the popularity of the resistance in the region will be a severe challenge for the enemies, who are hatching plots against them, specifically Israel and the U.S. The face-off between the Venezuelan government of Nicolas Maduro and the opposition led by Juan Guaido has put Caracas in a years-long political impasse and economic crisis. Several rounds of talks in recent years have been futile, and the two sides have failed to reach a consensus. In August, the Venezuelan government and the opposition began a new round of negotiations in Mexico City aimed at overcoming Venezuela's political and economic crisis. The dialogue was mediated by Norway. However, the latest developments have hampered the process of a possible settlement. Venezuela's government has decided to suspend the talks after Cape Verde extradited a Venezuelan envoy named Alex Saab to the United States on money laundering charges on Saturday. Saab was arrested in Cape Verde under a U.S. arrest warrant in June 2020 when his plane stopped there to refuel. Venezuelan President Nicolas Maduro lashed out at the U.S. for what he called kidnapping of an envoy to face an American court.
Saab was taken yesterday, skirting over everything. A plane arrived, assassins, hitmen came down. They sought him out and they removed him with blows from the jail he was held. They took him without advising lawyers, the family, nobody. A kidnapping by the United States government of an international diplomat.
Jorge Rodriguez, who heads the government's negotiating team, described the government's decision as a deep expression of protest over the brutal aggression against Alex Saab. He also called on Washington to release Saab immediately.
Venezuela is alerting the world that the life of Alex Saab is in danger. It's in the hands of judicial system that is directed at harming Venezuela. And we demand his immediate release by the American government.
The U.S. charged Saab in 2019 in connection with a bribery scheme and sanctioned him for allegedly orchestrating a corruption network that allowed Caracas to profit from a state-run food subsidy program. However, Saab's lawyers have denied the U.S. charges as politically motivated.
This is absolutely a political attack on Venezuela, and it is a kidnapping. This shows just how far in lawlessness the United States is willing to go and how much they are determined to attack Venezuela.
Meanwhile, U.S.-backed opposition figure Juan Guaido reacted to the decision to suspend the talks, accusing the government of evading the nation's problems. Caracas aims to ease U.S.-led sanctions on the Venezuelan nation, while the opposition says it aims to use the talks to secure guarantees for regional elections to be held in the fall. Venezuela descended into political turmoil after U.S.-backed opposition figure Juan Guaido unilaterally declared himself as the interim president in January 2019. He claimed that Maduro's re-election in 2018 was fraudulent. Then, United States refrained from recognizing Nicolas Maduro's re-election in 2018, imposed sanctions on the crisis-hit economy of the Latin American nation, and froze millions of dollars of Venezuelan money in the U.S. bank account. Washington has been using sanctions as leverage to overthrow the legitimate government of Maduro in what has been termed economic terrorism. Venezuela has faced chronic shortages of food and medicine as a result of U.S. sanctions, resulting in years of political and economic crisis.
Well, this is exactly what the U.S. government wants to prevent. And this may be also an effort on their part to sabotage even the negotiations going on in Mexico. That how can the talks continue under in this situation? But what needs to be condemned and denounced is depriving any country of food and medicine, particularly in this time of pandemic.
While freezing assets and slapping illegal sanctions on countries that refuse to submit to Washington's hegemonic policies is nothing new, the U.S. sanctions have directly targeted Venezuelan people. Experts say the sanctions, used as a tool for regime change, have no effect on the stability of Maduro administration, but further complicate the socioeconomic condition of ordinary people amidst a full-blown crisis. Seven people were killed and 60 others injured after a peaceful protest in the Lebanese capital, Beirut, turned deadly on Thursday. It all began as heavy gunfire erupted during a rally of Hezbollah and Amal movement supporters to protest against a judge probing the last year's Beirut port explosion as they accuse him of political bias and being swayed by the U.S. Hezbollah Secretary General Sayed Hassan Nasrallah has accused Judge Tarek Bitar of politically targeting officials in his investigation. The Beirut port blast in August 2020 killed over 200 people, injured around 6,000, and left some 300,000 homeless. It also caused further damage to Lebanon's already fragile economy. Following the unrest, Hezbollah and the Amal movement in a joint statement said the attack was aimed at creating civil strife. Hezbollah initially blamed the attack on the Christian Lebanese Forces Party, led by Samir Jaja. Later, reports from Lebanon's Interior Ministry confirmed that the far-right Lebanese Forces Party had started the Thursday shooting in Beirut. Hezbollah accused the Lebanese Forces Political Party of taking orders from the United States and being financed by some Arab countries. The Lebanese president vowed to hold accountable the perpetrators.
What happened will be the subject of security and judicial follow-up, and I, for my part, will ensure that the investigation reaches the truth of what happened in order to hold those responsible and instigators to account.
Aoun described the incident as painful and unacceptable. So far, Lebanese authorities have arrested 19 people in connection with the violence.
Well, the uproar and instability and confusion in the region are directly attributable to the United States, to the apartheid entity of Israel, and to the repressive and repulsive monarchy of Saudi Arabia. So the whole issue is basically outsiders doing their best to destabilize the region.
Israel has once again taken advantage of civilian aircraft covers to conduct airstrikes on Syria, a potentially dangerous move that could have resulted in an enormous tragedy. Israeli warplanes carried out strikes on the Palmyra area in the eastern countryside of Syria's Homs province. A Syrian soldier was killed and three others wounded in the attack.
They can commit crimes with impunity and feel that they have enough political cover because of their influence on the governments of the world, and which consequently influence the United Nations. They're backed by the United States, and their influence over the U.S. government and U.S. foreign policy is tremendous. They have more influence over U.S. foreign policy than U.S. citizens do.
A top Russian commander said in a statement that Syria decided not to use its air defense system to counter the Israeli attack, as two passenger airliners were flying in the area at the time. Israel has repeatedly used civilian aircraft as a shield against Syrian air defense systems in its aggression against the Arab country. In February 2020, an Airbus A320 with 172 passengers on board was forced to make an emergency landing at the Russian-operated Hamamim Air Base during an Israeli attack. Back in 2018, Israel had to apologize for using a Russian reconnaissance aircraft as a shield during an attack, causing a Syrian S-200 surface-to-air missile to shoot down the Russian aircraft instead and kill 15 Russian and 2 Syrian service members. Iran's ambassador to the Vienna-based international organizations has criticized the International Atomic Energy Agency for its lenient approach toward Israel's nuclear program. Kazem Gharibabadi said silence and negligence toward the issue send negative signals to the members of the Non-Proliferation Treaty. He expressed regret that the agency considers being outside the treaty as being exempt from any commitment and criticisms. He was responding to comments IAEA Chief Rafael Grossi made in an interview. When asked about the agency's focus on Iran's nuclear program and silence about that of Israel, Grossi argued that Tehran is a member of the NPT and must subject its nuclear sites to inspections and verifications, while the Israeli regime hasn't even signed the treaty.
No, the UN does not condemn Israel because Israel has been very effective with their foreign policy and their intelligence operations, infiltrating every other government on the planet. It's because of this that Israel can influence these governments to not take action against them, either directly or via the United Nations, and that's why Israel gets away with this with no consequences.
Israel, which pursues a policy of deliberate ambiguity about its nuclear weapons, is estimated to have hundreds of nuclear warheads in its arsenal. The regime has refused to allow inspections of its military nuclear facilities or sign the NPT. The Israeli regime, which is West Asia's only possessor of nuclear arms, has so far assassinated 7 Iranian nuclear scientists. But Iran's calls on the international community to hold the regime responsible for its crimes have fallen on deaf ears. Iran says the silence will embolden the regime to expand its aggressive measures.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Points to ponder on the Prophet's birthday. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam, everybody, and heartiest congratulations to you all on one of the most blessed days of the year. Today is a grand day in the history of mankind, when the Almighty Creator of the universe decided to bring into the world His last and greatest messenger, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. It is actually a day of double blessing, for it is the day on whose 136th anniversary was born the Prophet's sixth infallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him. So, first listen to a special program on the Prophet of Peace, and here we present you Ayah 28 of Surah Fat, where God Almighty informs mankind, "It is He who has sent His prophets with guidance and the true religion, that He may make it prevail over all religions, and Allah suffices as witness." Today, the 17th of Rabiul Awwal, is that grand day in the history of planet Earth when God decreed the physical birth of the first ever creation, a being of celestial light, more ancient than not just the galaxies and the planetary systems containing resplendent stars and suns, but also more superior to the angels and cherubim, including Gabriel, who were all created well after him. Those in doubt are advised to read the Noble Quran more thoroughly and with an insight supported by the light of faith, in order to understand the divine words about the last and greatest messenger who was entrusted with the universal mission of Islam for all mankind and for all time, as Ayah 107 of Surah Anbiya bears witness, "We have not sent you but as mercy unto the creation." Such words were not used by the All-Wise Creator regarding the mission of any other prophet, since their missions time-bound and geographically confined. That was the reason the prophets of the past had prophesied the coming of the Master of all divine messengers, predictions whose traces remain in the sacred texts of all religions, despite the tampering of interpolators over the millenniums. The Noble Quran has preserved examples of such prophecies, like the prayer of Prophet Abraham, peace upon him, and the tidings of the virgin-born Messiah to his followers, as testified by Ayah 6 of the Surah. O children of Israel, indeed I am the Prophet of Allah to you, to confirm what is before me of the Torah, and to give the tidings of the prophets to come after me, whose name is Ahmad. We understand the divine promise to make the truth of Islam prevail over all religions, creeds that divided humanity into sects and cults by changing the contents of the heavenly scriptures and coining a weird belief, such as Paul, the Hellenized Jew's transformation of Prophet Jesus, peace upon him, into God's Son. It was for this reason that the Seal of Messengers was born in the full limelight of history in Mecca, in the morally virtuous family of the monotheist Bani Hashim clan, descended from Prophet Abraham's firstborn son, Prophet Ishmael, peace upon him. Thus, the anniversary of this blessed day is an occasion to celebrate as a God-pleasing duty for every true Muslim, since divine providence decreed that this was no ordinary birth. As a matter of fact, as history bears testimony, Prophet Muhammad's birth was preceded by and accompanied with miracles, such as the divine wrath that struck the elephantine hordes of Abrahe, the Abyssinian governor of Yemen, who intended to destroy the Holy Kaaba. It would be repetitive to say the idols installed in Abraham's monotheist edifice, the Holy Kaaba, by the pagan Arabs, crashed headlong on the night of his birth. In Ctesiphon, in Madain in Iraq, a crack appeared in the main arch of the palace of the Sassanid king of kings, Anushirvan, while 14 parapets fell to the ground from atop the royal residence. In interior Iran, the sacred fire kept burning for centuries in the main Zoroastrian temple suddenly died down. Similar miracles were witnessed in far-off China, as well as in India and in the Roman Empire. spread across Europe and North Africa, heralding the birth of the deliverer of mankind. Perhaps the skeptics, including the so-called Muslims who frown upon the birthday celebrations of the greatest prophet, may say Islam has failed to prevail over all religions, and moreover, their differences about the date of his birth anniversary as well as jurisprudential matters. In addition, Islam today in non-Muslim countries is depicted as the creed of cutthroats, of mass murderers, of cannibalistic terrorists, of jihadi rapists, and the like. This deliberate distortion of facts warrants us to scientifically probe the exemplary life of the best of creation, the dynamic legacy he left, and for whom, and did those who claim to be the political representatives of the Prophet of Peace follow his advice and formula for unity, especially the following hadith: I am leaving behind among you the thaqalain, or two weighty things, the Book of God, Quran, and my progeny, the Ahlul Bayt. Hold fast to them, and you will not go astray, for the two never separate with each other, even when they return to me at the fountain of Kothar on Resurrection Day. The answer is obvious. The caliphate was hijacked, and any usurper, whether of the past when military power subdued lands from Spain in the west to the borders of India and China in the east, or of our times when terrorists masquerade as Muslims, cannot make any deviant ideology prevail over all other religions. This means God's promise of Islam's peaceful prevailing over all creeds will only be fulfilled when the master of the affairs are the legitimate and divinely designated successors of the Messenger of Mercy. For this reason, Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, had said without mincing words, as recorded in the hadith compilations of our Sunni brethren as well, the world will not end until my descendant, Imam Mahdi, peace upon him, will reappear to establish the global government of peace and justice by ending corruption and oppression. As for the actual date of his birth, this is not a matter of contention, as was wisely resolved by the father of the Islamic Revolution, Imam Khomeini, in 1979, when he designated the Islamic Unity Week to bridge the 12th and 17th span. The Prophet's 16th fallible heir, Imam Ja'far Sadiq, peace upon him, has said that on the birth of his illustrious ancestor Fatemeh bint Asad, peace upon her, the mother of Imam Ali, peace upon him, rushed to her husband Abu Talib and gave the good news of the birth of a radiant nephew to him. She also described strange things about the wonderful birth. Abu Talib said, after 30 years, a son will be born to you too, who will be like this newborn in every aspect except prophethood. Abu Talib, peace upon him, performed the aqiqah, or hair-removing ceremony of his nephew on the seventh day of birth and invited the entire Hashemite clan to the feast, saying it is the walimeh, or banquet of Ahmad, ask why was Muhammad being called Ahmad, he said, "Those in the heaven praise him as such." The pseudo-Muslims wrongly accusing the Prophet's guardian and uncle, who till the last years of his life fiercely protected his nephew from the plots of the pagan Arabs, of lacking faith in Islam, should read the Noble Quran, where in Ayah 6 of Surah Saf, the Almighty Allah has quoted the tidings of Prophet Jesus, peace upon him, to his followers some 6 centuries before the birth of the Prophet of Islam, foretelling the coming of the Prophet after him named Ahmad. It is interesting to note that the Gospel of Saint John, despite the tampering it has gone through, still preserves the words of Jesus of the coming of the last and greatest prophet as Comforter in English translation and Paraclete in its Greek translation, which is the translation of the original Hebrew Aramaic word Hamdah, or the praiseworthy, and which in Arabic means Ahmad. This is further proof of the universal mission of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, to all mankind, the reliability of the narrations of his monotheist household, and the logic behind celebrations of his blessed birth. It is outside the scope of this brief radio program to mention the prophecies of Prophet Moses and Prophet Isaiah about the last prophet, or the predictions in the sacred texts of the Zoroastrians and the Hindus of Islam's worldwide triumph. Goodbye and God bless you all.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Eruba Shavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Pereza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alemi, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
A new poll shows that 3 out of every 4 French people believes that their purchasing power has diminished due to rising inflation, and 90% of the nation is worried about it. The nation's economy minister departed from his Western peers by admitting that inflation will continue to rise until 2023 at the earliest. Combined with unemployment, which was entrenched even before the coronavirus recession, the admission seems to announce the beginning of dreaded stagflation.
La vie est chère et encore plus à Paris.
Life is expensive, especially in Paris, from real estate to basic shopping needs to even the price of a simple lunch. Our purchasing power keeps going down.
The government has just announced a cap on household gas prices until the end of 2022. Natural gas has soared to record highs across Europe. They also announced a one-time payment of 100 euros to those who earn less than 2,000 euros per month, which amounts to 60% of the population. However, many say the one-off payment is not nearly enough.
Ça devient compliqué, ça diminue fortement.
No, it's not enough at all. When somebody is only taking home 2,000 euros a month, 100 euros isn't nearly enough to make difference when it comes to the energy costs. The government is not helping the middle class much at all.
The Yellow Vest protests, which initially kicked off 3 years ago due to rising fuel prices, just began what they called Season 2 last weekend. They are promising to continue marching. By a huge margin, purchasing power is the number one issue ahead of France's presidential election next year, just as it has been in all the elections since the great financial crisis began.
C'est really